You're listening to the New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planning. If you're looking to take your next strategic step towards multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com has a new look, a new host, and new resources. Take a minute and check out the Church Planning Masterclass with lessons from leaders like Matt Chandler, D.A. Horton, Trillia Newbell, and more at newchurches.com.
Hey, welcome back to the New Churches Podcast. My name is Clint Clifton, and today we're going to be talking with Todd Adkins, a frequent contributor to this podcast. He's been around for a long time on hundreds of episodes of the New Churches Podcast in the past. Todd is an incredible leader. He's really bright, really gifted, really energetic. He's got a background in leadership development. He, in fact, is responsible for developing LifeWay's leadership development pipeline that many of our churches are using. He's also been leading the team that developed Ministry Grid. He's got a ton of background in strategic leadership development, and he's going to be really, really helpful to us today as we talk with him about building and dreaming big, building a new church, dreaming big on a shoestring budget. How do we get started when the church has almost nothing, when we have a really small resource pool? How do we get started with big dreams? And so Todd's going to give us some incredible information about that. He and I are going to get to talk about it, and I'm very excited about the conversation. Before we get into it, though, I want to mention to you about the Church Planting Primer. The Church Planting Primer is free, and it's on newchurches.com. It's a video course that you could show to a small group or even on a Sunday night or Wednesday night to your church. If you want to get your church fired up about church planting, if you want to get them interested in church planting, if you're like me, you're a pastor and you start talking to your people about church planting and they say things like, why do we need more churches? There's churches everywhere. Or they might say, it seems like we should put our energy into helping dying churches get healthier rather than starting new churches across the street from them. And so you have people who are perhaps pushing back on the idea of church planting all the time. Well, the Church Planting Primer is meant to address that. There are four sessions. The first session covers the biblical rationale for church planting. The second one covers the need for new churches, statistical data that shows and compels the church about the need for new churches. The third session is about how new churches begin in the New Testament and how they begin today. And the last and final session is about how everyday Christians can be involved in starting new churches. So I'm really excited about the Church Planting Primer. I hope you'll download and take a look at it and consider using it in your own church. So with that being said, let's jump into this conversation with Todd Adkins. So sometimes when church planters go out, I would say often when church planters go out, they are on a shoestring budget. So Todd, we're thinking about church planters on a shoestring budget, right, as compared to those who have big budgets. You know, what's your take on, as you've seen the landscape of church planting, on what's the percentage of guys who go out there under-resourced as opposed to those who go out there properly resourced or over-resourced?
Oh, man. I don't know if I can really call that one, because I actually greatly prefer when people are really under, I think being under-resourced is actually helpful. Mm. So much so that, like, when I was launching campuses, I would launch them on a shoestring.
Yeah.
Just because it forces conversations and it forces choices,
yeah,
that are really healthy long-term versus perpetuating things that, it might be good, but they're not, I don't know, they're not essential. And they're,
yeah,
it does
cause you to boil down to essentials, doesn't it?
So I think there's a huge lie out there that is, you know, in order to be creative and innovative, I need unlimited time, mm-hmm, and unlimited resources. Mm-hmm. That is a lie. You, yeah, will actually be much better off with having finite time and finite resources, mm, because there's actually a book, Adam, I can't think of his last name, it's called A Beautiful Constraint, that, okay, is absolutely, wow, amazing. And so what it is you've got, there's always going to be people in your life and ministry that are kind of keepers of the status quo, who are going to say, oh, well, we can't do this or we can't do that because we don't have enough money or we don't have resources, or even some creative people will just be, you know, that's, in my opinion, and a lot of times that's an excuse, because you're not being creative, you're really just throwing money at a problem. So when I look at my own ministry, I can look back 20 plus years ago now, to when I was a student pastor and we got a new space. And, this is actually with Eric Geiger. This is actually the book, Simple Church. Don't tell anybody, but, it was really about the student ministry that happened there. But, we had this, what had been a bar, and we took the cages out that the girls danced in. I'm not joking. And we it was in a mini mall, and we just redid the place. We didn't have much money. So we had the idea of, we bought these with two big trampolines, rectangle trampolines, and cut the bottoms off of them and used this reflective white paint. And those were our screens. So we had two screens up. We thought we were just bad, man. It was awesome. So this is late 90s, early 2000s. It was amazing. We had so much fun. When I look back, I look back with pride on some of those things where it was just crazy innovative and fun. And it was because of the constraints that we had, not because we had unlimited everything.
Yeah.
And guys who have worked at big churches with big budgets, y'all know that it's true.
Yeah.
May not want to admit it, but you know that it's true.
So, so I planted a church, and that church had no money. I mean, we had nothing to rub together. I mean, in the beginning, and I'd been a part of a few church lines before that, no money. And then when I was, I don't know, it was 30 something, I started working for NAM, and NAM's the best resource church planting organization on the planet. I mean, there are resources upon resources, and because of the generosity of Christians who give to that, I mean, it's amazing. And then I went to work for a mega church and helping them start new churches, and man, they had resources too. And I can say with all honesty, it's easier. I know it sounds crazy. It's easier and it's more fun to compel people to attempt great things for the Lord on a limited budget. And so I would say your resource poverty can actually be an advantage when it comes to growth. In our day and age, people are really skeptical of the big and the wealthy and the powerful. Because of that reality, though, the scrappy upstart has an advantage over the well-funded franchise. So I think it's really important, if you're a church planter out there and you are lamenting over the reality that you have little, or you're not able to do what the other guys can do, or you're using that, God forbid, as an excuse not to do what God's put in your heart to do, I just want you to know that you can actually capitalize on the advantages that have been given to you as a church planner on a shoestring budget, if you will just simply own it and live in that reality. And just like some of the examples you just gave, Todd, the conversation, hopefully we can, we can come up with a few practical ways to own it. Todd's already given you some examples. But I think that is a big idea we want you to walk away with today, that you should not see your poverty, so to speak, as a disadvantage, but as an advantage.
Well, I do have a tool that you can use also, and it's from, it's at least adapted from, if it's not straight from, a beautiful constraint, and it's called a We Can If Map.
Okay.
What it's designed to do, whether you're in a legacy organization that struggles moving forward because there's always a third of the people that, are keepers of status quo, or you're brand new and you're just scrappy and trying to find a way forward, and you're looking for a tool to help you with creative thought, this is your baby. So it's actually 9 different formulas that you kind of run any problem or anything you're trying to do that you're facing when you say, we can't because fill in the blank.
That's good.
You say, well, we can if we, and then there's these formulas, right? So if we substitute X for Y, if we fund it by, you know, this, or if we use, you know, these people to do that. I mean, whatever, if it's a people problem, a finance problem, a whatever problem, there's nine different ones, but I'm telling you, if you run it through that, it is going to bring up ideas. Now, it doesn't mean that you're going to get it the first time, because it might bring up an idea that has another "we can't because." So you just run it through again. And I'm telling you, it's just a beautiful little framework to help you process, you and a team, you know, kind of process. You can put that up on the board and kind of walk through that. I know it's on Grid, and it's probably, if you just Google "we can if," you'll see it. If you want my version of it, you just add my name to it, and it's probably somewhere. I'm sure it's on YouTube or somewhere.
Somewhere out there on the internet. Okay, so so we've talked about the fact that your relative resource poverty can potentially be an advantage if you'll just own it. But also, it feels important to say, from my point of view, Todd, clear vision always is followed by a sufficient resourcing.
Yes.
Is that your experience?
That is my experience. And honestly, if we want to get real here, a lot of churches that experienced a downturn in giving during COVID, that was their experience as well, whether they were established churches or church plants. The churches that had clarity in their vision and direction, I think that's you saw their giving stay.
That's an interesting conversation, Todd, because I've never put that together. People ask me all the time, which I'm sure they do, you too. Why did some churches do well during COVID and some bad?
That's
brilliant, actually. I haven't thought of that. But
because they're comparing your vision with everybody. I mean, especially younger generations. Like, you know, older generations tend to give their tithe, their 10%, especially if they're good old Baptists, are going to give their tithe. I'm a tech savvy dude, all that, but my brain is wired almost like a boomer when it comes to Baptistness and giving. Like, if they pass out that communion, holy cow, I take that insanely seriously, because we only did it once a quarter and I was scared to death as a child. You know, I'm going to give my tithe to my church. Am I going to give to other things? Absolutely. But younger generations will tend to give just as much statistically. However, the way they slice up the pie is different. And whether it's to, you know, compassion or Voice of the Martyrs or, you know, fill in the blank, they see their gift as giving to, you know, the kingdom equally as your church. And so if your church doesn't have as good of a campaign around Christmas time or the end of year, and your people aren't educated and clued in and really cued in to what your vision is and their part in it, you're opening yourself up, you know, big time. So I think that's part of it. I mean, man, if you want to talk sometime about what we saw before COVID and after COVID, I have pretty strong opinions on that too. And a lot of it has to do with, I think we measured attendance and called it engagement, and measured engagement and called it discipleship. And that's a big part of what we're experiencing right now.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. When I think about, you know, aside from the COVID conversation, which we could probably dedicate a whole episode to, the idea that resources follow vision seems to be consistently true in my life. I mean, you're right. When you look at churches who went through COVID and they had a clear and compelling vision all the way through about even how they were going to deal with the pandemic and how the pandemic fit into God's overall sovereign plan for the world and their community, that had an answer for those questions, they seemed to fare better through the pandemic. However, I think that's always true. I think when we have a clear and compelling vision about what it is that we're doing, then resources flow. If we focus on the resources and say, why don't we have the resources? Then the resources don't necessarily come very easily. It's only when we're able to put our focus on making sure that we're headed in a direction that pleases the Lord and that makes sense to the people who are around us. I find that people are like happy to be generous. And most Christians have set aside a part of their budget. Most churches have set aside a part of their budget, prepared to be generous to things right. they feel compelled by. And all you have to do is be the person that casts a clear and compelling vision for them. Yeah. So, it's amazing to think about that in light of COVID. That's something that's going to keep me turning over in my mind a little bit. So I want you to dream big, even if you're on a shoestring budget, especially if you're out there and you're planting a church. I know it can seem daunting and overwhelming, and you will look for every excuse in the world why things aren't going well. And one of the scapegoats often is, I'm not resourced enough. And I want to sort of take that away from you if I can, and put the responsibility back on you and say, like, if you are feeling under-resourced, you're really under-inspiring, you know, people, because there are people around you who have the ability to resource you. I think when I was a church planner, I had this attitude that if churches weren't supporting me, is because they weren't faithful, or they didn't love Jesus enough, or they didn't believe in the mission of God. But really, it was had more to do with they didn't believe in me. You know, they didn't believe in what I was, you know, casting or selling, or they weren't quite sure that I was going to stick at it for the long haul, or that I was going to do it well, and so they weren't sure it was a good stewardship.
All right. I'm going to drop something because we have a little bit of time here. So here's something anecdotal as well. I don't have proof of this, by the way. It's just something that I have exegeted from my experience. And that is, when you go back 40 years, you see there was some research done 70s, 80s that said, church members give more. So what did churches do? They lowered the bar for the next 20 years to church membership, which was wild to me, because that didn't solve, like, making someone a church member eat more easily did not make them give more. They gave more because of they were on board. And they were actively contributing. That made them part of the crew, you know, of your church. What happened during COVID was, we were calling people crew of our church. They weren't even given. Like, the reason why you didn't see attendance dip is because your crew is your crew. I'm sorry, you're giving dip because your crew is your crew. Now, if you had passengers, if you had stowaways on board, especially stowaways, they're gone. Uh-huh. Passengers who you thought were crew, some of those are gone. Uh-huh. So one of the things that I think is really helpful that I do know research on is that if people are serving in your church, they're actually more likely to give, and they're givers. So not only are they giving of their time, they're actually giving more money as well. Uh-huh. So the interesting thing to me is, you know, that is a lead measure, lag measure kind of thing, where it's like, hey, the more, it's not a reason to get more volunteers or anything, but it's to say, hey, you know, part of understanding how this works is that as people come in and as people begin to serve, that's when they put more skin in the game.
Yeah.
And so the only way you're going to do that is, again, by providing clarity with that vision piece of where we're going, where they fit in.
Man. The intuition is to say, man, I wish I had more money so I could dream bigger. But the reality is that the clearer, the more compelling, the bigger, so to speak, your dream, the more easily donors will give to see that accomplished. And so you're thinking of it backwards, potentially, if you're lamenting over the size of your budget and seeing that as a limitation to the amount that you can do for the kingdom, that you can do for the Lord. So hope that this has been helpful to you in some way as you are on your church planning journey. I recognize that some of you are just getting started in church planning. Some of you are just kicking the tires of church planning, and some of you have maybe been out there doing it for a while. But we pray that these resources can serve you and help you as you go along on your church planting journey. So Todd, thank you so much for having this conversation with me today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
You've been listening to the New Churches Podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you liked what you heard, take a minute to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources and to participate in the Church Planting Masterclass, visit newchurches.com.